This is Franciscan Voice, finding God's voice among us.
Today we have with us Friar Steve McMichael. Thanks for being with us, Father Stephen. The first thing, could you kind of just introduce yourself? You're a professor.
Professor at the University of St. Thomas. I've been there for 19 years, so I'm on my 20th year.
What's your specialty? What's your field?
Two things, one of which is medieval studies. I work most of my life and energy and time and study and publishing deals with the Middle Ages, and also with Jewish Christian relations and Muslim Christian relations and so forth. And primarily I got into that through the lens of the Middle Ages, because the Middle Ages was the time of the Crusades and Jewish Christian relations, Francis going to the Sultan in 1219. So there's a lot of connections there. So I work, but primarily I'm working on medieval spirituality.
One thing that the main topic we wanted to touch on today is you have a lot of experience as a pilgrimage director, going on pilgrimages yourself over the years. How did you get involved in being a pilgrimage director, pilgrimage leader?
Well, actually, it came through the University of St. Thomas, because at the University of St. Thomas, we have what we call J-term, which is January term, all of us know. So it's a semester, and a lot of study abroad programs take place during that month of January. And I suggested to this friend of mine, Sister Joanne Schlotzlein, this was after about only teaching at St. Thomas for about 2 years, so this is like 2002, that we could do a course, which we would actually do a course, but it would be a type of pilgrimage program. So we entitled it Pilgrimage in Italy, the history of Christianity from the beginnings to the late Middle Ages. And we just did probably about the 12th one just this last year.
One thing that we were talking about is the difference between merely being a tourist and being a pilgrim. Mm-hmm. How would you explain that difference?
Well, I think the major difference is that you're there to experience, you know, in more in-depth way, places. You know, this is, we call them sacred spaces. And the tourist will just kind of zip through. You know, I see this in Rome all the time, where they see the Colosseum, they get off the bus, they look at it, they may walk around it, and then they're back on the bus and they leave. We would like to, and this is why we emphasize quality rather than quantity. We go to a place and we explain to them what they're going to see. We lead them through it, and then we give them an opportunity to just explore on their own and to let them see the things that they see, and let them. And I've learned a lot from the pilgrims in terms of what they see that I don't see, because I'm got my, you know, my program. I know what's of interest to me. But the primary thing is to really take quality time in a space, because that's what it's there for. This is what they constructed it for, was for you to have an experience. And so it's the pilgrim is the one that goes into this place, and he or she tries to see what it is that's being presented to them. And it's in the world of literature, in biblical studies, they talk about the world behind a text, the world of a text, and the world you bring to the text. And so I always explain, you've got this building, say, for example, the Basilica of St. Francis. You got this whole history. So this thing is being built in the 13th century. So you have to know some of the background, so you know the world behind the text. But then you have the text itself, which is a basilica itself. And that is open to interpretation, right, as any text is, and then the world you bring to the text. And so I always explain to the students, you know, I'm coming through the lens of a Franciscan who knows the life of Francis really well, but they're seeing this with fresh eyes. They come into a whole different experience. So part of it is that dialogue that goes between those worlds of a text.
Well, you were saying something, I think it was even earlier today when we were speaking, about when you first go into the Basilica, of St. Francis in Assisi, the medieval person who hadn't experienced art or didn't have all these images mm-hmm. that we're bombarded with all the time was just overwhelmed by everything there. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't that be the case with us today, because we're used to a certain kind of image and we go and see something that is from the Middle Ages, you know, almost 800 years mm-hmm. ago constructed, you know, there's like a surprise element there for us too, isn't there?
Well, a surprise element because a lot of people don't know, they don't have the background, for example, to interpret a text that is from, an image from the 13th century. And so that's why we provide sort of a lens for them to view that, but then we leave it up to them to see things. I mean, you know, the Basilica of St. Francis, for example, I mean, you could spend days in there or going through the art. I mean, it's so full of images. I always sort of give them the greatest hits, the things that are interest to me. But I also say, look around and what strikes you? In fact, one of the assignments we give our students in January is to, after you've experienced this and go back to it, what image? If you had to choose one image, one painting, one statue, what spoke to you? And that's what we try to get pilgrims to do in all of the places is, you know, what in this place has spoken to you? And it's really amazing and how many people have, they just have different experiences. And you know what different experiences, but also images that strike them for various reasons. A lot of times it connects with their life. You know, so something speaks to them of their own experience and maybe what they're struggling with, what they're, maybe a point of devotion do they have that, for example, they have a devotion to Mary. Now they're seeing an image of Mary that's speaking to them of a different aspect of Mary, for example, even of Francis, you know, like Franciscans, they see a different image of Francis and it speaks to them and wakens them up to maybe a different perspective, a different lens by viewing Francis.
So this gets to another point that I was wanting to ask you about. Thank you, because this idea of pilgrimage as not only having an experience, an external experience, but also an internal experience. I mean, mm-hmm. that we should want to perhaps deepen our faith or knowledge or whatever. Do you see that happening with the pilgrimages you lead?
Well, the one example, I know I always tell this to my students and other pilgrims, Angela Foligno, one of our most recent saints, who's around the year 1300, I don't know the exact date, but she did a pilgrimage to Assisi and she saw one stained glass window and that image of that stained glass spoke to her and she went into like ecstasy. She went into like a coma. Well, I don't expect my students and other pilgrimages to have that, but like there's something that happens to them that strikes them internally. And that's what we've tried to do. And I think that's the lens of the pilgrim. If nothing is happening inside of you, then what's the point of it? You know, and one of the things that I always point out when we have Mass and I'm preaching in the Basilica is one of the points I always try to make is, would Francis really be upset about this place being built in his honor this way? And I think, you know, in some ways you could say yes, but then the other ways it's saying, Francis would have viewed this place as if every pilgrim would come in there and have something that spoke to them and caused a little conversion, maybe a major conversion. You know, you don't have to major conversion like Angela Foligno, but, something that has really sort of spoken to them and has sort of changed their perspective, changed their life somehow or other. I think Francis would say, "Va bene, this is good. It's..." Part of the thing I think that he's seeing is a pilgrim is very much like an itinerant preacher, in the sense that they weren't preaching, but they were on the road, and they experienced that. And so there's this movement. And so Francis recognized life itself is sort of a pilgrimage. And so part of that it was coming from seeing pilgrims, experiencing that pilgrimage himself, going to Rome, for example. They tell that story where he went down there and changed his clothes into... from a business person to a poor person. This comes up in this text called the Vita Brevior. It's a text that we just recently discovered that it's really a very interesting story about Francis's own conversion thing of being a pilgrim and going from a business person to a poor person. So it's just by simply dressing up as that and begging in Rome. And that had a tremendous influence on him. In fact, you know, that's what but it's one of the reasons why he chose poverty, besides looking at Jesus and Mary as being the poor people and poor and humble servants.
If someone were considering going on pilgrimage, it doesn't have to be overseas. It doesn't have to be, I mean, we have shrines and different things mm-hmm. in the U.S. What would you say to someone who's listening? How would they find, what would be the value for somebody considering just picking up and going even to a place like Gethsemane in Kentucky or to Our Lady of Consolation here in Cary, Ohio? What would you say to them that would gain out of that experience?
Well, I would say that once again, it's this thing of quality. If you're going to go to some place, go there because you want to experience the place as much as possible in its entirety. I don't know if that's possible, but when you go to a place, treat it as a sacred place and recognize that people created this because they wanted to, like a monastery of Gethsemane, for example, but you know, especially here in Cary, we've got the shrine here. And so, you know, the people that built this place, that put the art in and stuff like this, they had specific reasons for doing that. And they wanted the people that came here to be inspired, to have an experience of based on that art, the architecture, and so forth. And also part of the pilgrimage thing is participate in the activities. You know, we have these processions, for example, we have the devotions, you know, there's mass, there's, and so part of the thing is that you should plan it wherever you're going, that it's a time in which certain things are happening. But part of it is coming when a lot of people are here because part of this experience of a shrine, you know, a pilgrimage site, is that there is something that is going on, a celebration.
It's a community,
and especially this sense of community here. We're all in this together and so forth like this, and so you experience other people are doing this as you are. And
so it's an immersion mm-hmm. sort of thing rather than a superficial or just a casual kind of thing mm-hmm. is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, and especially when we do these pilgrimage programs to Italy, for example, part of the whole thing is that the bonding that goes on in the group, that, you know, when you're experiencing things, because we try to find time for discussion so that people are reflecting upon their own experiences and stuff like this. And this is why in the course of a day in a pilgrimage program, we allow a space so that people have time to stop. And like we find a lot of people do that. They sit in a coffee bar, they have a cappuccino or they have a glass of wine. But that's a time in which they start making connections. They start seeing, well, this kind of fits into my life. You know, I didn't even realize, you know, that this was going on in my life. It's this, you know, what Father John said to me today, and this thing really struck me. What I saw, I broke away from the group, and I saw this statue, you know, of Mary that just spoke to me. And you know, it's really about how people are talking about their experiences and stuff that really make it it's a group process.
Almost like Canterbury Tales with the guy with the
exactly
of, yeah.
And everyone has a different experience.
Everybody has a story.
And, yeah, yeah.
And you learn from each other's stories mm-hmm. on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people find that it's you know, as I always say about, like, for example, the Camino in Spain, they always say it's not about getting there. It's about the way. In fact, a friend of mine, Professor Tim Johnson down at Flagler University, he took students on a trip that was like a 6-day pilgrimage program. It's the last part of the Camino in 6 days. And one of the students said, couldn't we just walk all the way to Compostela and then we'll have, you know, 4 or 5 days to just relax? And Tim would say, no, that's not the point. The point is what happens during the course of the day, even those most difficult days. There's a friend of mine that just went on this said, you know, she just went through this breaking point. She couldn't sleep. She climbed up one mountain and she thought, okay, we're done. And she found out there's a whole nother sort of even a larger hill or mountain that's they have to climb. And, you know, she just experienced this breaking point. And it really told her a lot about herself. And it's that breaking point where you realize, I need help. My life is not in control. I mean, you learn a lot of life lessons about who you are when you do the something like the Camino.
And in fact, it's a parallel to life itself then, as you're mm-hmm. saying. You know, yeah. People want to either get to the end and just, you know, goof around or enjoy or go do mm-hmm. it. Or like this woman who, you know, you like life, you hit a hill and you think you're over and then you hit a bigger hill.
Yeah, and so you learn that the Camino is very much about what you've experienced in life itself.
To find other episodes and more content from Franciscan Voice, follow us at our website at franciscanvoice.org.